Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello and welcome to the Miles to Memories podcast. I'm Sean Coomer, your host, joined by Joe Chung from As the Joe Flies and Disney Deciphered, wearing his Jets beanie. I'm told it's still very cold over in Boston. We had a really cold weekend in Vegas too, down into the 40s at night, which is kind of untypical for this time of year, but you were telling me it can stay cold all the way through May.
Yeah, I mean, May is when I like feel comfortable putting away, you know, stuff like the hat. But I don't know. The other thing is, once it starts getting warmer, like it was 70s 2 weeks ago, and then your body starts getting acclimated to it, and then you're like freezing again when it's only, quote unquote, 39 or 40 today, but still feels cold. This room is still badly insulated, so it is what it is. But how are you doing? 40s in Vegas sounds really cold, but I guess that's the desert.
Yeah, it got cold for a couple of days because we had a high 70s last week, and it got really cold. I saw your doppelganger, Han. I saw he was in Detroit and there was snow there this last week. So, I can't complain. It's all good. And we'll get some spring weather and then it'll be 100 degrees and I'll be complaining about that. To be human on Earth, Joe, to be human on Earth.
Indeed, indeed. Speaking of Earth these days, you know, we had some, I guess, outstanding stuff from your trip. I really wanted to hear, and, you know, sorry, I was rushing last week. That's my fault. But I wanted to hear about your experience with the Meta glasses. It's funny because you are one of two people who talked to me about it the same week. We had a patron of our Disney Deciphered podcast come on one of our bonus episodes, and he was talking about Tokyo Disney. And, you know, Leslie and I were talking later in another episode about how there are weird recording rules, theoretically, in Japan. Like, you're not supposed to necessarily record and have your light on. We talked about this. Anyway, he was like, well, if you're wearing Meta glasses, you can record anything you want and people won't know. And you got to use them on this last trip, right?
Yeah, I've had them for a couple months and I've used them for some Vegas content. And I used it on our San Diego trip at SeaWorld. These are great for rides. I will say that if you're going to an amusement park, it's great for rides. So what they are, I guess we should back up a little bit, is they are a pair of Ray-Ban glasses. In the case, I have the Wayfarer glasses, which you can buy the regular Wayfarers for around, I think, $200. And the Meta version are $329. Now, I would say, Joe, that Ray-Ban glasses are not my usual style of glasses. So I don't know that I would go out there wearing Ray-Bans normally, but they're also not the ugliest things and they're pretty nice and they serve a good purpose here. They're not very much heavier than normal Ray-Ban glasses. All of the tech is in kind of the stocks and they're just a little bit thicker, but you don't notice them at all. And they're just regular sunglasses other than that. But what they have is they have some AI built in, which I don't use quite very much, but there is like a new beta that I'm in where you can tap it and ask it to tell you what you're seeing. So let's say you were at a museum and you tapped it, it would recognize the painting, look it up, tell you all the information about it, stuff like that. So I want to test that out more. They also have, you know, like a virtual assistant built in, kind of like Siri. I don't really use that, but let's talk about the camera. It has a camera built in, and the way you take pictures is you just press a button on the top of the glasses and it takes a picture, or you can take videos up to 1 minute, up to 60 seconds, and they're vertical videos, very good quality during the day. I want to say that the quality of the videos and pictures in full light is very close to my iPhone 15, which is beyond impressive to me because the lens is not that big. Now, in low light, it does suffer a little bit, but it's still decent. And, you know, it has digital stabilization. So if you're moving around a lot in low light, you'll kind of notice some jitter. But again, these are built into sunglasses that are not much bigger than the normal version. And what I really enjoyed on this vacation, this was the first time I got to take it on like a full vacation with the family, walking around castles, walking around everywhere. I don't have to keep pulling out my phone. I want to take a picture. I just hit the button. I want to take a quick video of my daughter. I just do that. And you sort of move about your day. And I really enjoyed it for that. So many good pictures. There are some things you got to kind of keep in mind. Your head, will move the camera, right? So you sort of learn to use your head as, I don't know, in the way you frame things. You can't just shake your head back and forth or the video won't come out great. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And I think that people should consider this, even if just to wear them on vacation, to get some cool photos and not to be glued to your phone the entire time.
All right. So like one thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about these glasses is, and I wish I had worn them for the recording, is it's funny because I was like, well, this is a way to take video of things and not look like a creeper. But then I also thought, this is a way to take videos of things if you are actually a creeper. So what I was curious about is like when you're recording, and I know people wouldn't necessarily notice this, but when you're recording, is there some sort of light or anything that indicates that people are being recorded? Or can you just completely do it incognito? Like, I can't remember the dude's name, but you know, Mark and his Michigan State, there was the guy who was like stealing signals or whatever using glasses. You know, is there a way to see when someone is recording you?
So the camera lens is on your left side and then on the right side. And it's really interesting. They have a piece of glass that mimics the look of the camera lens. So when you're looking at the glasses, they look symmetrical. But the camera lens is on the left. On the right, there is a white LED light that lights up when you're recording or flashes when you take a picture. It's kind of dim, and I'll be honest, most people never notice it unless you kind of point it out. I've tried asking people, and once they're aware of the fact that the glasses take video, they see it right away, but people aren't really noticing it. And if you were like outdoors somewhere like Disney, I don't think they would notice it. Similarly to Japan, Disneyland Paris, they do not allow video on their rides, or at least they didn't on this trip. I don't remember in the past there being that rule, but I did take video on one ride, the Slinky Dog ride that goes around, just to kind of see, and they didn't notice. So, you know, I think that it's sort of in the spirit. You're just wearing the sunglasses. So is it a big deal if you're filming because you're not holding something and you don't have loose objects? But yeah, I haven't had anybody really notice unless they knew I had the glasses on and then they're aware of it. It could be a little brighter, I would say, the light.
So my last question is, do you wear glasses normally? And do people just get these with just non-prescription lenses just to have them and wear?
Yeah, I mean, these are just like if you wore Ray-Ban sunglasses, this is just like wearing those. And so I've sort of switched to them. Normally, I wear aviator glasses and, you know, a different brand. Like I said, this wouldn't be the style I would pick, but I've used them for like casino, like walking down the strip. It's really interesting POV stuff, but specifically like to vacation with kids, it's cool because you're getting a different perspective than if you pulled out your phone. And just for example, we were at the Peña National Castle in Lisbon and, you know, walking along the edge of this castle that had these beautiful views and, you know, just getting that POV of me walking behind my daughter. It's a different video than if I had pulled out my phone. And, you know, when you're watching it back, you're sort of reliving what you experienced as well. So that's all, you know, very good. One other thing to say, they come with a glasses case that looks exactly like a normal Ray-Ban glasses case, but it has a battery built in. So I think the battery life is somewhere around an hour to 2 hours advertised, but you get 5 or 6 charges on the battery case. And, you know, you're always sort of putting your glasses back in the case. So I've never actually, even through like full days in Europe, I never went to 0%. You know, it's really easy to just put them in the case. They're charging while they're in the case. And you can even set it up where it automatically downloads the pictures and videos to your phone without you having to, you know, go in there, or you can manually do it as well with the app. So Meta, I think, kind of hit it out of the park. Now, there are, you know, privacy concerns with Meta, all that stuff that you have with Facebook. But I think this product works surprisingly well in 2024. I can't wait to see how this matures. And, you know, as the people in technology have said, you have something like the Apple Vision Pro where you're doing, or even the Quest headsets where you're doing AR and VR, and they have a lot of tech and they're big and bulky. And you have these sunglasses that have more and more tech on them. And I guess the idea is to get these products closer and closer to each other, to get that Apple Vision Pro kind of in the form factor of sunglasses. That's sort of the ultimate goal. So you'll see these two product categories kind of move closer to each other as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a tech podcast, but that's what I always felt was the issue with VR, is just people, just the aesthetic look of putting a gigantic helmet on your head, three body problem notwithstanding, people are not going to want to do that. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like. I'm sure, and like, I would not be surprised at all if in 30 years, if this is just like completely standard and it becomes like the new phone, because, you know, the phone was a huge leap forward when smartphones came out and stuff like that. All right. Other thing that I wanted to follow up on from your trip was Time Shifter. I know you were like you were having a little bit of trouble with it, but I'm curious, like, how it ended up going for you. Did it work at all?
Yeah, I want to talk time shifter. I forgot one thing about the Metasmart glasses. They have speakers built in that downfire into your ears. So you can actually use them as headphones too while you're walking down the street. Nobody else can really hear them.
Oh, like the Shox things that like runners wear that don't actually go inside their ears.
Yeah. So it works really well. And unless you have it blasting, people next to you won't be able to hear it. At a place like Disney or somewhere there's tons of noise, it's going to be really hard to hear. But if you're on a walk and you don't want to have headphones in or a run, these are great and they work really well. I also did a Kickstarter for these other pair of glasses that have a screen built in, you know, like an overlay screen on them. So I guess I'm kind of more interested in this category than the VR headsets. So I'll report back on stuff kind of as I do it because I'm testing out some stuff over time. So Time Shifter, this is that app, we've talked about it before, where it tries to help you deal with jet lag, something that Joe and I have struggled with in our old age lately. And what you do is you go in there and you get one trip for free. There's also for United 1K members, you can get a free membership to pro membership for it. So if you're a 1K member, just Google that and you can get the app for free basically. But you go in before your trip and you put in your flights, all of the stuff, going there, coming back. So the app knows when you're leaving, when you're returning. And then a few days before you leave, it starts with notifications. And the one thing when you set up the trip, it asks if you want it with melatonin and without melatonin. And I don't generally take melatonin to sleep. So I said no. And I was regretting that because I kind of wish I had done it with melatonin after I was struggling going there. But you're going to start getting notifications on your phone a few days out saying, you know, you should avoid caffeine starting at this time and you should go to bed at this time. And it's starting to kind of condition yourself. And I really like it because even though I really struggled going there, it's good reminders for stuff through the trip. It's starting to remind you like a few days before you get back saying, okay, you know, don't drink caffeine after this time, go to bed here. And even when we landed in Europe, it's saying, okay, take a nap here so that hopefully you get a few hours of sleep here and that'll help you sleep through the night. So it's constantly telling you this stuff. And I found it, you know, helpful. I'm someone with caffeine where it never affected me when I was younger. And so I sometimes drink it without thinking. And that's not always the case these days. So I did appreciate those reminders, like don't drink caffeine after 1 p.m. And I feel like coming back, I adjusted a little bit better. So overall, I think it's worth a try, especially get that free trip. People should try it on their next trip and see if it works for them.
Yeah, that's great to know. Even though I don't like notifications on my phone, for something like this, I feel like I would like to be reminded. Although no caffeine after 1 p.m. Are you kidding me? So, you know, I guess I could drink caffeine-free Diet Coke, but you can't get that in Europe. But it's good to know. And thanks again for everyone who reached out to talk about Time Shifter. All right, we've closed out your trip in Europe, Sean, plus that one little day at Six Flags. What else are we talking about today?
So I want to talk about Rio and Hyatt for a minute because I did my first stay there last week. And I get a lot of questions from people about what's the experience, you know, what is it like for globalists, you know, how you're getting treated there. And so I thought I would talk really quickly about that. So Rio has technically all suites, but they have bigger suites, smaller suites, but their standard rooms there are 550 square feet. So when I checked in, I wasn't upgraded to anything but a renovated room. They still have unrenovated rooms. So I booked that and it was like a $20 rate. And then I was upgraded to a renovated room, but not one of their larger suites, but I also didn't ask for it. So that's a thing. And I did talk about the room and an issue I had with the lock on our Vegas show, if people want to know that. But I want to talk specifically about the Hyatt integration for people on this show, how it's working and what you get. Right now, the casino's half under construction. There is no digital check-in right now. In the first days of the partnership, some people got texts with links to check in, and that was Rio's own system. And I don't know why, but they seem to have cut that off. But they're not integrated with Hyatt's digital key or their online check-in yet. But I'm told that that's coming. So that's a little bit of a, you know, where you're getting a disconnect from the typical Hyatt experience. But globalist, totally recognized at check-in, 4 p.m. checkout, totally recognized, offered me my free water at the front desk. And you get your free breakfast as well at Hash House Agogo, which is a pretty good restaurant here. And what's really interesting is that they take it off the bill right there at the restaurant. For my wife and I, we did a breakfast there of $66 and it was taken completely off. I've heard from one member of the Diamond Group who had a $170 check every day for four members in his party, all taken off on a $20 rate. And of course, globalists are not paying the, you know, $40+ resort fee either.
Yeah, I love that. You figure it's going to work, but I hate when the number is on the check and you got to check your folio later. So having it off in the beginning is totally awesome. Now, obviously, they haven't done any renovations or anything like that. You said that the Rio has felt a little bit more tired lately. Is that still kind of your impression? And did you actually stay in the room? When you stay at these hotels, do you actually stay in the rooms?
I do typically stay in the rooms. For this stay, I didn't because I have a lot of Rio stays coming up. So I used it as a base. I did use the room and I didn't sleep in it, but I will be sleeping in a room doing kind of a full review at some point soon. You know, I think this is a great deal for globalists. If you're in Vegas, $20 a night, you know, during some nights, obviously weekends can be higher, other nights can be higher. But, you know, I talked about how, you know, organically, I wouldn't have 60 nights this year with Hyatt to qualify for globalist again. This would be the first time in probably 8 or 9 years I didn't have that. And this will be a way for me to get some nights. And, you know, I won't be going over there every day for breakfast, but that's a great deal. I think so. If you're in Las Vegas, it's a good deal. But as far as, is it tired? Should people go stay there? Because, you know, we lost MGM for Hyatt people. So I know there's a lot of people who visit Vegas and they want to know, is it worth staying at Rio for the Hyatt credit, be off the strip? I would say, you know, it really depends on what you want. The new owners, Dreamscape, took over within the last year and it's under a massive renovation. So over the next couple of years, the entire property will be renovated. Like I said, they have a great deal of their rooms are already renovated. And I would say these rooms are like Hyatt Place quality, like a new Hyatt Place. So nice, you know, not luxury, but nice rooms, solid. Like I said, they're big. They all feature a big couch. The bathroom's fine. So I feel like from a room perspective, if you expect a nicer Hyatt Place, that's kind of what you're going to get. And I would stay there. I think that's perfectly good. As far as the casino, the pool area is reopened. The pool area at Rio had gotten into really bad straits. I mean, it was really bad shape. They have refreshed the entire area. I was out there. They only had the first pool open, but the other ones looked like they were probably going to open this week. They were almost done and they did a great job there. So you have a really large pool area, many pools, waterfalls. So for that, you know, on a vacation, I think that is really good. What you're going to run into for the next year or two in Rio is just different renovations around the casino. And right now they just blocked off the center bar and they're redoing their sort of coffee shop tavern restaurant. And that happens to sit right in the middle of the casino, meaning that it's blocked off completely. So you have to kind of go from one side around the registration desk to the other side. And then there's still a lot of areas that haven't been touched yet that are tired. So I would say you're paying 20, 30, 40 bucks a night. A globalist, no resort fees, getting Hash House a Go-Go, which again is a really good restaurant, big portions, just decent food there. It's an amazing deal. And then you add in like bonus journeys, all these promotions that are happening and the stay could almost pay for itself before you get all the other stuff, plus the credit. And for me, I'm looking at Hyatt's milestone rewards and kind of eyeing some of those bigger numbers to see if it makes sense, if I can get enough $20 a night nights. Right now, some of the midweeks are $20 through the end of May. They have stuff that's further out priced a little bit higher, so I'm waiting to see what the prices are. But I kind of plan to use it as a base of operations when I have to go to the strip and when I need to be down there and using the rooms for that purpose. And I think it's a good deal. Certainly something people should consider and an easy way to get Hyatt nights. And dare I say, like even if you were staying somewhere else and you're in town, maybe use that as a second room and give it a try. I don't know.
What is the easiest way to get between Rio and the Strip? Do they have a shuttle or do people just Uber because it's like $10 or whatever?
Yeah, Uber would probably be the easiest. I'd say it's about a 20, 25 minute walk from Rio over the bridge. It's not the greatest walk because it's over the freeway, not like huge sidewalks. And that would get you over to Caesar's Palace. They used to have, back when Caesar's owned it, they used to have shuttles quite a while ago, but they haven't had that for a while. But you are also in the area of two other casinos. Gold Coast is directly across the street and Palms is very nice as well. And that's almost like another strip style casino similar to Rio. So you can, in that little area, you have three casinos. It's not too far of the strip. Like I said, I do think Ubering would be your best option. You know, I'm very hopeful with what they're doing there, what they have done so far, what they've announced so far. There's a new food hall there. You know, I think the new owners have a good vision and it's just going to take a couple of years because as you said, it was tired. Caesars invested almost no money in it for the last decade and it shows. And so you're going to still have areas that feel that way. And we're probably only 5% into the renovation of the public spaces right now.
That's cool. Always good to have another Hyatt property. And yeah, like I said, that's really great about the breakfast. I got to come back to Vegas and yeah, maybe I'll stay in two hotels at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that if you can get a good rate. Let's talk IHG for a second, Joe, because Benji wrote an article that he's finally pursuing IHG Diamond status, specifically by spending $40,000 on the Premier credit card to get it. And what's interesting is I was given by IHG when I did that promotion with them. I did an ad when they launched IHG Rewards. They just gave me diamond status. They didn't tell me they were going to do it. It just showed up one day and it lasted through the beginning of this year. I just want to disclose that because I didn't earn it. And I had just a few experiences. I'm not a big IHG person. And I had a few experiences, mostly at Holiday Inns. And I didn't obviously get upgrades, but I don't know that you would expect that at Holiday Inn. But the breakfast was nice, and it was definitely a step up over the platinum that I've had forever, thanks to the credit card. And, he's pursuing it. He's heard anecdotally that in the nicer brands, that they are getting suite upgrades, that they're getting really nice breakfasts in hotels like, you know, I guess Crowne Plaza, Intercontinental, some of their top brands. And I think it's interesting whether... I guess it depends on how much spend you have, if it makes sense to do it, and how many stays you have. He also points out, and this is a good thing, that you get fourth night free on award stays, and that's different than the fifth night free with some of the competitors. And that can make a difference because I think a lot of people do four night trips. Five nights is sort of stretching it out a bit.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this article. I think, you know, if Benji is going to pursue status in something, obviously he does not do that unless there is real value in that for him. And so I like how, you know, and he's honest in the article about, you know, maybe it's like a one and done thing. I remember a couple of years ago, I think he did this with American Airlines status as well. But it's always good to see, you know, because he's not me, Sean. He's not just chasing status, not even sure how he's going to use it. He's going to come up with a plan to try to maximize it as best as possible. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he can maximize this IHG status and, you know, how he's going to get there. So it's just one of those things, like if Benji's going for the status, there's definitely value there for someone, not just him.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to hear through his stays and maybe from people who are listening how they've experienced diamond at the higher end REIT properties. Because, you know, again, I have limited experience with that and I lost my diamond. I love status, Joe. You know, I love collecting status. It makes me feel good. But admittedly, losing the diamond status, not a huge deal. I still have platinum status from the credit card and realistically, I wasn't using it. So not too difficult for me. I know that it wasn't going to work for me, but like you said, there will be value and Benji will continue to write about it and his experiences. And I look forward to kind of hearing, are they competing in the way that they set out a couple years ago with the Hyatts and the Marriotts and the Hiltons with adding the breakfast benefit, giving these suite upgrades, you know, giving more premium features at their premium properties to draw those business travelers and those higher end travelers. Are they actually delivering on that? Because there are a lot of like opt-outs for hotels in this new program, as there are with pretty much any new program we've talked about. When they launch a new rewards program, it's generally designed to help the property owners save money, I guess, because as we know, these companies don't really own hotels anymore. They're management companies, more or less. They've divested from all their real estate and generally they just have programs. So they have these big trusts that own all the properties and they want benefits that sound really good to consumers, but also make it, you know, affordable for properties to offer them. So, we'll see how it all works out. And I'm glad that he was able to do that and looking forward to his pursuit of all that. We'll put a link to the article in the description so you can go through all of his reasoning and how exactly he's going to do it. I did want to highlight another Benji article. This one a little triggering to me because I don't think I don't get this, Joe. And, you know, shout out to Benji, but he puts one flight in. This is why our Spirit Airlines experiment is over. And this is why people, we have Benji on the site. We have different perspectives. We don't all have to agree. And that's a great thing. But, you know, he talks about how his flight was on a new plane and it was on time and everything worked out okay, but he'll never fly them again. And the backstory to that is he got the Spirit credit card a couple years ago, got some miles from that sign-up offer, and finally was able to burn them on a trip to Orlando. The flight timing wasn't great. I think he had to do an early morning flight, so he had to stay at the airport hotel, the Hyatt there, the night before. But his biggest complaint, I think, was, one, that there was a delayed flight, Frontier flight, at the next gate, so it was like flooded with people, you know, 20-somethings, college people, I guess, going on spring break, and that people on board didn't take their assigned seats. So I guess there was a discrepancy and then flight attendants had to check everybody's boarding pass, which admittedly sucks. But he also said the seat was more comfortable than he thought. I thought there was more benefit to that. And I think it's just another endorsement for why people need to try these budget airlines to see if they work for them, because oftentimes you're getting a decent experience. And that's what I took from it. I don't know why he's done with it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. It's also like tough to, when there are bad operations, it is tough to, I mean, I guess with any airline, you want to see how they handle bad operations. But if that's Frontier spilling over, like, and I just don't know how you can blame Spirit for that. The thing that triggered me, though, Sean, was how Benji ended the article, and I will quote that here. Quote, I feel about Spirit the way I feel about oysters. Certain people are way into them while others aren't. Regardless, I want to experience it for myself. End quote. Sean, the reason why that's triggering for me is like oysters is like one of the fanciest foods out there. So that would be the equivalent of, remember way back, like our first episode of this podcast or second episode of this podcast, Mark tried Cathay Pacific First Class for the first time and it wasn't for him. That's trying oysters. Trying Spirit is like, I told you in the chat, like Taco Bell or something like that, which I happen to love, by the way. But, you know, I would not equate Spirit to oysters. So that was the only thing that really triggered me. Other than that, all respect to Benji. Of course, you're welcome to not like any airline you want.
It's funny. The thing that came to mind for me was 7-Eleven nachos, because I don't know, there are people that like those. And that's the idea of getting nachos, like those chili cheese nachos at 7-Eleven is just disgusting to me. So I don't know. Everybody loves Taco Bell, Joe. What are you talking about? Yeah, that is a funny analogy.
No, you're right. I like 7-Eleven nachos better because they're not like, because everyone's going to eat Taco Bell at some point in the, or almost everyone's going to eat Taco Bell at some point in their life too. You know, we all were young sometime, right, John?
Hey, I like Taco Bell still, but you know, that's maybe a personal problem of mine. Speaking of Frontier, you know, they announced that change to their planes, I guess, where they're basically blocking out the middle seat on their extra legroom, which, you know, I want to complain for a second because they basically downgraded their top tier status. They made it so there's less seats with extra legroom for people. Now, if you do happen to get one of those seats without the middle seat, I guess you're getting a better experience that way. But top tier elites don't get that till 24 hours out. Smart for them because they're going to be able to sell those seats, generate more revenue instead of giving them away to free to people who status matched like me. But that did fundamentally kind of change it for them. So I guess while we're on the low cost carrier beat, I thought I would talk about that. But just try these airlines. I mean, have you seen some of these prices for Southwest lately? For some of these, especially if you're in like smaller airports and some of these more obscure routes, if you can save hundreds of dollars, you do make a great point. They don't have interline agreements and there can be some downsides. But every single person I hear trashing Spirits, trashing Frontier, hasn't flown them. It's just trashing the idea of these carriers. And I've flown Ryanair a bunch, EasyJet a bunch, other value airlines all over the world. I've flown Allegiant and Spirit and Frontier. And I haven't flown Spirit in a couple of years, but I've just, you know, if I could count the bad experiences, I've had significantly more good experiences with these airlines and saved a ton of money. And I've had tons of bad experiences with airlines like American is like the worst. I've had bad experiences with JetBlue in the last couple of years. So like, it's not like all the airlines are so great that these other low-cost carriers are so bad. And stop being judgmental of other passengers. And I'm not talking to Benji. I get it. You don't want to be on a plane full of spring break partiers. But, you know, everybody has a right to fly. This is good that people, no matter what they make and their, you know, social economic realities, that they can go somewhere and they can see someplace. And that's what travelers should want. So stop being judgmental, people.
I mean, yes to all that. What you brought up that I didn't think of is I feel like I am way less biased against European low-cost carriers like Ryanair. And I've flown various European low-cost carriers that like no longer exist because they went out of business. And, you know, you just kind of, when you're overseas, you kind of just go with it. But I don't know, something about being in the States maybe makes us more biased, which is a good point that you bring up. The other thing is, you know, I just want to say, yeah, the legacy carriers aren't that great. I mean, United's planes are literally falling apart as they are flying. So, you know, it's not like it's the Ritz over there at United.
It's nuts. Like, I'm not going to pretend that, like, I'm an aviation expert. You know, I'm not, and I don't cover aviation for a living. So I, you know, obviously in this hobby or what we do, we're on the fringes of that. But what's happened with Boeing is absolutely nuts. Their CEO has said he's going to step down, which is good. But what can you do with this company? Because they're too big to fail. They're too important to everything to fail. And they've clearly shown time and time again that they're going to, you know, make mistakes. And I really do hope that we get some legislation to really strengthen the oversight over Boeing. They're very important to the country, not only on the civilian side and the aviation side, but on the military side. And they're important to travel in the world because travel, you know, is growing. Aviation is growing and they can't build planes fast enough to deal with demand. But we need those planes to be safe. And it really is troubling every time you see one of those things. And as a reminder, there are so many planes in the sky, millions of people flying every day. So even when you see these incidents, they're isolated, but not acceptable either.
I'm not an aviation expert, Sean, but I don't think your plane should be falling apart. I don't even know why I'm laughing. It's like dark humor. Like, I don't know why I'm laughing at this, but it's just the whole thing is bananas. And I, one more time, yes to everything that you said. We're in a real pickle here because you can't let Boeing go out of business. This is like when we bailed out the airlines during COVID and stuff like that. We couldn't let all the airlines go out of business. But maybe this time, if the U.S. ends up helping Boeing out, maybe we don't let the board like take stock buybacks or whatever and make them actually use the money to hopefully fix these planes. But I'm just glad JetBlue, you know, they mostly fly Airbuses.
And let's not forget the MAX incidents happened in 2019. That was 5 years ago. And we're still talking about these issues. Like, nothing got fixed after that. And they've had a string of other stuff. And there's plenty of, like I said, of aviation journalists that cover it. And that they're probably screaming at our sort of amateur take on it. But again, we just want safe airplanes. And all that's nuts. Let's talk about something that we are experts in, Disney, because Chase has increased the offer on the Disney Visa cards. And specifically the Premier Visa, up to a $400 sign-up offer bonus. That's the one I would recommend. The lower regular Disney Visa card has a $250 after spending $500. But let's focus on the Premier one. It has a $49 annual fee, $400 statement credit. So it's not Disney credit. That's important to know, because I just got this card on a similar offer a few months ago. It wasn't a public offer, but this time it is. I should also say I have a referral link and that you could use if you want to support me or the show. And if you go to the article, we allow you to post your referral links for these cards in the comments there. So you can do that as well. And hopefully other people will use your referral link. But basically, it's a net $350. And you can also earn referrals from other people. You get Disney credit, some perks. Don't they have lounges at Disney World now for Disney cardholders, Joe?
They had one. I'm not sure if it reopened post-pandemic, but the thing that they do have, which is really nice, is at Epcot, there's like an extra bonus character meet and greet for Chase Disney customers, and the line is like way shorter for that, and it's usually like two of the Fab Five are going to be there at any given time and get a picture with them together, so that's pretty great. Yeah, I think the $400 bonus actually does make a decent difference, because with that Chase Premier card, I'm always comparing it to what you can get with a cashback card, like a 2% cashback card. When the bonus is only $200, normally it makes, I haven't done the math for a while, but normally I have found that you can get an edge with a 2% cashback card and then just using that stuff. Of course, you know, it doesn't have a castle on the credit card or whatever, but when it's $400, I think it makes the math more palatable. And then also, if you have a lot of Disney friends, or if you're in Disney Facebook groups, stuff like that, like Sean, you were talking about your own personal referral, like those personal referrals can be pretty lucrative. It's like $100 and you do it five times a year, so you can get an extra $500 out if you have tons of friends who want to go to Disney, and you too can refer your credit cards. It's not just for people, you know, it's for anyone. It's a personal referral. So just one more thing about all that. The benefits you get from Chase in terms of like the 10% off and the character meet and greet and stuff like that, you can get just having a debit card. I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. As long as you have any kind of Chase checking account, you can call in and get, I mean, I did it like 10 years ago, but you can get a Chase debit card that's linked to your checking account. And then that works the same way as the credit card in terms of the discounts and things.
And a couple other things. This is obviously subject to 524, to keep that in mind. And you can downgrade the card if you need to after the year. So if you want to keep the no annual fee version, you still have access to referrals. And I, you know, it's weird that we talk about referrals as a benefit of a card, but we know people who have done pretty well, you know, able to max that out every year. And that's $500 in credit. And that's even good at places like Disney Springs, right? Because it works just like a Disney gift card, as far as I understand. So I know that there are certain people that are like Lego at Disney Springs, and you can use it for that. You can use it for restaurants, not just the parks. So yeah, I think for the right person, this is the right way to go. And if you have a lot of Disney friends, get the card and then get them to get the card. And I do believe this is the best bonus we've seen on this card, at least in a long time. Like I said, I got the same bonus on like a private targeted offer a few months ago, but I don't believe we've seen higher than $400, have we?
That's the highest I've seen and that I can remember. It's been 200 for so long that I just kind of stopped thinking about the card. So 400, yeah, is pretty good. It's double, one might say.
Yeah, and I was expecting, because I didn't pay attention, it clearly says statement credit, but when I signed up, I was expecting Disney dollars, and it was just literally a credit off my bill, which was is better, right? I mean, anytime you can get money instead of funny money, it's a good thing. So it works cash just like that. One last thing we got to talk about, Joe, is United, back to United. And they did something that I think is really great. And then they had issues with it, but they added mileage pooling, or at least they tried to. And then it went down, I think, almost immediately. And it's still down, I believe, as of the time we record this. But you will now be able to pool your mileage with other members. And that's really good. We've seen that. I think JetBlue has a version of that. Some other airlines like Frontier, depending on your status, has a version of that. But friends and family will be able to join a group and add miles to a collective account. You can have up to 5 mileage plus members on it. You can only be a member of one pool, so you can't pool into multiple things. That makes perfect sense. Each individual decides how many miles they want to put into the pool. So you can only put in a certain amount of miles. And this should be a way, I guess, for people to share and help kind of top up for different bookings. And once miles are in the pool, those miles can be used based on how the pool leader had set it up. So the person in charge is important. Don't get into a pool with a tyrannical maniac. But I hope more airlines do this. I hope more programs do this. The points are there anyway. Let us pool them.
I mean, it makes so much sense for families. I can't even remember how, you know, honestly, I think JetBlue, like the pooling, the way it just works is like, I'm just using everyone's miles. And then, you know, I just don't even know what's in their accounts. It just kind of all like ends up in the same bucket. And I just use that. If you just think about for like the normal family user, right? They take one trip a year. Let's say my family of 5, we take one flight and they all earn like 2,000 miles each or whatever, right? And on its own, those are completely useless. But you would think, oh, if you let me pool it, then you're going to redeem your miles. And then all of a sudden, like United's going to lose money because we're redeeming miles. No, I don't think so. Because next year, when I go on a trip, I have these 10,000 miles that I pooled and I can get one award ticket for my family. And then I spend 4 cash tickets for the rest of my family if I'm like a normal non-miles and points crazy person. And, you know, the United got 4 people to buy cash tickets because of that one. It's like, it's almost like a loss leader, right? Whereas if I didn't have the family pooled miles to redeem, maybe I would go look at Spirit or something like that. So I think this is user-friendly and it's probably going to benefit the airlines if they did this as well.
And just from the, over the years, I've flown on American, for example, a lot on paid tickets with my family. And, you know, I have miles for my son, miles for my daughter, not always enough to like do anything with. And it would be really nice to pool them. And I don't see any way where this isn't good for the customers. I hope we see more of it. It's unfortunate that they launched it and then immediately had an issue. But I mean, you can't really blame them for that. They're going to work to fix it. It's not like they pulled it back. It's just maybe it was more popular than ever. They ran into a bug. We really don't know, but it's just not up as of now. But it is announced and ready to go. So yeah, excited to do that. A lot of stories this week, a lot of smaller stuff, a lot of airline related stuff, but I hope people enjoyed it. I'd love to hear from people about their experiences at Rio. And also if you've tried out Meta smart glasses, if you tried out any other smart glasses, let me know, because I'm kind of obsessed with this a little bit, trying to test these things out. As long as they're not costing me like $5,000 to buy or $3,500 like the Apple Vision Pro. I wanted that forever, but I just couldn't get myself to bite the bullet on it. But like I said, I'm trying out these. I ordered these new glasses that will have a screen built in, which I'm very interested in seeing, although I don't know if I really need to be on more screens, but I'd love to hear people's feedback. You can hit me up on social media or email me to let me know about that. And Joe, where can people find you when they're not listening to this fine podcast?
Yeah. Before that, just to give people a little bit of context, Sean normally sends us the topics like 4 hours before we record the podcast. Sean sent me that he wanted to talk about the Meta smart glasses a week ago. So he's really into them. So please let us know your feedback. You can find me, don't talk to me about the Meta smart glasses, but you can find me at As Joe Flies, all over social media, Joseph Chung at travelmation.net if you have any travel needs. What about you, Sean?
At Miles to Memories, all over social media. We have our Vegas show, youtube.com/miles to memories. And then for all like articles we talked about, all of our posts, podcasts, videos, everything we do, milestomemories.com. We love 5-star reviews. If you're on Apple Podcasts, consider giving us a great review. It'd help us out a lot. And most importantly, I hope you have a great week. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
See ya.